Rat.
Rose.
No.
Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome back to Warp Trails. This is the RetroZap Podcast Network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me, as always, is my wife, co-host, and most favorite Star Trek fan, Beth.
Hello!
So, we are going to be diving into Janal, which is episode episode three of season five of Discovery. But before we do that, we have a little bit of Star Trek news that we thought we'd discuss.
Good news and bad news, yeah.
Yeah, which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with the bad news.
All right. Well, the bad news is that Lower Decks is, well,
having
it's
its
good
final
news.
Season.
It's coming back. Yeah.
the fifth season will be its last is the bad news. That Lower Deck is returning for that fifth season is good news.
Exactly. Same as Discovery here. This isn't a big surprise to me because this is kind of what the buzz has been about this show ever since season four ended. I hate to see it end. I know you and I and our boys have had a lot of fun watching this. We've watched this series all the way through a couple times, usually in spurts. So I hate to see it go, but I can also kind of understand that maybe you run out of the best stuff to spoof on it and material would be a little bit difficult to come up with. But what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I hate to see it go, but you know, there's that saying about leave when they still want more. Mm-hmm. And if Lower Deck's going to leave when I still want more, rather than go the route of, could we be done? You know, these jokes are getting recycled. I don't know that I had to pick between those two things, but that's how I'm going to decide it has to be, so I can sour grapes this whole thing, which is an Earth expression.
Nice touch.
Thank you. I agree. I really enjoy Lower Decks. I will watch all five seasons many, many times. I'm glad it has been part of the Star Trek canon.
Yeah. And I don't know anything, and why would I have no inside information? Would you be terribly surprised if in 3 or 4 years they release like another season or like a special or something? I mean, just
not
because
at all.
Yeah, just because that kind of feels like that's the way this could potentially go. I mean, there's so much room to do stuff with this and these characters. So
I also won an award for pivoting here, but the fact that Strange New Worlds might still be on the air means that there could still be that opportunity for hijinks to carry on between those two shows.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so that does get us in the second bit of news, which is that Strange New Worlds has been renewed for a fourth season. And we even haven't even had the third one come out yet. It's still in production. So I'm super excited about that. I think for me, since Paramount Plus has been putting out Star Trek back when it was even CBS All Access, the best two shows have been Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds for me. So I'm super excited to get more. And frankly, I feel like I wouldn't be too surprised if it got to a fifth and final season as well. That may be a model that they're starting to set up, but what do you think?
I don't know. I'm interested to see because there is sort of the tradition of seven seasons, and I wouldn't be super surprised if Strange New Worlds went that route. But to your point, that's sort of an old-fashioned model of television. So five may be the last one. I don't know. I think it is a mix of how expensive it is versus how successful it is. But Strange New Worlds has a lot of good buzz, so I'm optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you there. Of course, this is a show where we know the lead character, our captain, has a predetermined fate. So that might figure into it as well. But this is not a Strange New Worlds recap episode. This is a Discovery episode. So I guess we should go ahead and turn to that. This will be a full spoiler discussion. And once again, we are discussing episode 3 of season 5, which is called Janal. The crew of Discovery head to Trill to look for the next clue in finding the technology for the progenitors. And while they're there, they have to go through that Trill ritual, which is called a Jiantara, I believe, so that someone can host the personality, the spirit, soul, whatever it is, of a previous host for the symbiote, and that ends up being Culver. We also get some developments between Adira and Gray, and then Raynor has to try and fit in with the new crew of Discovery as their commanding first officer. And then there are some relationship developments with Saru and Tarina. So we have a lot of different things going on here. I figured rather than go through this moment by moment, we would tackle each one of the storylines independently.
Okay.
Beth, I cede the decision to you. Where do you want to start?
In your notes, you have the discussion about Maul and Locke first, so we can discuss what little we know about. I know that gets us at to the beginning in the end, but we can have that conversation. I think that's kind of the fastest one to have.
Right. So, yeah, between Culber and Booker and various people on the ship, they're trying to find out more about Maul and Locke. Funnily enough, there is nothing more to know about Locke right now, but Cleveland shares that Maul is was abandoned by the previous Cleveland Booker when she was 8. And he, although he wanted to fix things with her and he never got the chance, the Maul then lost her mother at the age of 14, became a career at 17, and did two stints in Emerald Chain lockup over her lifespan. So, okay, that's some background information. I think it's something to put a pin in, but I'm not sure there's a whole lot that we can learn from that. I mean, I think it is a neat little Emerald Chain reference since we had them in previous seasons Discovery, but what's your takeaway?
I liked it. I mean, usually I don't like a whole, and this was a good way to do an exposition dump. Like, look, we don't really want to have 3 or 4 episodes where we set up Maul as a person. So we're just going to do this exposition dump so that you know what you need to know. It also sets, it actually completely undoes my theory from last week, which is that they're not nearly as clever as they think they are. I think Maul may be exactly clever and be able to keep up. I also, if you're not going to know anything about Locke, I appreciate that this is not, because Discovery does sometimes the we must know and we this is a huge deal and until we figure it out, we're all going to obsess about it. And that we are not obsessing about what, you know, Locke and Locke's background makes me happy. I mean, at some point it's going to come out and will, or it will never come out. And that to me is not a key issue. Do you disagree? Do you want to know all about Locke or?
No, I think to your point, it was nice of them to remind us of these two characters because they get, well, Locke gets no screen time other than having his image show up in a few places, but Maul shows up for less than 30 seconds at the end of the episode. I mean, you know, skipping all the way to the end, she is there to put a tracker on Adira and then kind of leaves. And so just reminding us that these are our antagonists. I don't want to necessarily call them villains, but antagonists in this series, or the season of the series, is a nice touch, but they otherwise don't feature in this episode. So again, it may have been a necessary storytelling to step for the audience.
No, I really kind of, I mean, they make a big deal about how Trill Security can handle Maul and Locke, and not only can they not handle them, Maul gets into one of the most sacred places during one of the most sacred ceremonies, and no one notices.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right on there. I mean, and they do say that they're dangerous, and they make that statement several times, and, you know, Trill says, oh, don't worry about it, we can handle them. Well, they didn't even see them coming, to your point, so.
Well, and Adira was there, and, you know, Maul could not have put a tracker on Adira if Adira was more aware. Now, I'm not blaming Adira for getting, and we're assuming it's a tracker. I'm assuming it's a tracker. Mm-hmm. We don't actually know. I'm not blaming Adira for not being aware. They're going through some things, but, you know, it's not like it was just Trill. Starfleet also dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah. I feel fairly safe assuming it's a bug or a tracker because there's otherwise no way that Maul and Locke are going to know where Discovery goes off to next because Janal's not coming back to talk to them. So
for sure. No. And yeah. I think that is what makes sense. I think it could be any number of things, but a tracker is what makes the most sense.
All right. Well, we brought them up, so let's go ahead and talk about them. Adira.
Yes.
And their relationship with Gray.
Mm-hmm.
it's over, which is not a terribly big surprise. I did think it was funny when Adira was, not that she was nervous, but when Adira was nervous about seeing Gray again, and Jet was talking to them about this, and then they left, and Jet goes over to Stamets like, "Hey, Space Dad, you might want to be on the lookout," and he had no clue about what was going on there.
Put a pin in that. I want to get back to that conversation, not that conversation, but that segue. That to me, when we get to one of our later plot points.
Sure. But it really boils down to they've spent 6 months apart. They've been having conversations by holos, but it's really not enough for a relationship. Gray is busy becoming one of these guardians for symbiotes on Trill. And Adira is integrating themselves into the crew on Discovery. And, you know, this, she works in engineering and in science and stuff like this. And although they offer to request a transfer to be closer to Gray, neither one of them wants the other to give up what they've got for them. And so they decide it's best that they redefine their relationship, and, you know, they're going to be friends, always be there for each other, but that's the end. I mean, I guess I'm fine with it. This, as you put last week, this show is all about relationships, and this has been one. It just hasn't, I can't say that I necessarily miss this when it's not on screen, if you know what I mean.
That's fair. No, I'm also, I would like Adira to have some growth independent of Gray, which is not to say I have anything against Gray. Gray is a perfectly fine character, but Gray made a decision to become a guardian on Trill, and as has been made clear by what these characters have been through in the last 6 months, this is, you know, Gray's path and Adira's path. They are complete, the paths are different. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they are becoming different people. And why I would, considering what Adira has been through this whole time in terms of Gray and the Trills and not really being an independent entity, I would like Adira to have, like I said, some time to figure out who they are when they are just them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't have anything more to add about that storyline in there. I think it was, comparatively speaking, other than what we're talking about with Maul and Locke, it's probably the shortest, easiest one to deal with in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to, my only last point on that before we move on would be kudos to Adira, because Gray says, you know, well, there are many different types of relationships. We can try to figure something out. And Adira doesn't say this, but it's basically this. I don't know how to do mm-hmm. our relationship any other way, which I think is a level of maturity that I don't think I had at their age. I mean, there's that like, no, I'm so desperate for this relationship that I'm going to mutate and pretzel myself into whatever way I can possibly do it to make this relationship continue. And the fact that Adira was like, no, I want it this way. And if this way isn't going to work for all the reasons we agree on, let's just be friends with the acknowledgement that probably we're going to be acquaintances 6 months from now. Mm-hmm. And so kudos to Adira for that level of maturity.
You know, one last thing did occur to me about this. I forgot Adira was a host for that symbiote. And that was such a major plot point, what, back in season 3 of this show. Mm-hmm. And I think that just speaks to how slowly the show has come out over the years. I know that there was an actors and a writer's strike last year that put a delay in all these things, but they weren't exactly on an accelerated pace to begin with. And this show started several years ago, and we're now only on season 5. And so it hasn't exactly done a lot to keep itself front of mind with a lot of these developments.
I don't disagree. This is a show where I rely on the last, previously on Discovery, more mm-hmm. than any other show, because not only credit where credit is due to whoever puts those together, They will go back into different seasons to pull out some things. But to your point, it's like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. That happened. Oh yeah. That happened. So yeah.
I feel like I remember the seasons in broad strokes more than I do a lot of these type of issues, but
that's fair.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we talk about Rainer next? So
okay.
He beams over and is all about trying to use Earth expressions, icebreakers and things like that. Or break the ice, I should say. And Burnham tells him then, I'm going to go down to Trill and I'm going to look after this clue. And while I'm gone, your job is to integrate yourself into the crew and to meet everybody, get to know them. And so he acknowledges that order, but then goes to a science lab and spends all of his time to trying to find out more about Maul and Locke, and basically concedes to Tilly that he'll meet with crew members. And first off, he says 5-minute intervals, because he's not going to march around the ship meeting them where they work. They're going to come to him because he's the superior officer. And then when they get there, he gives them 20 words or less to tell them something about themselves that wasn't, that he couldn't have learned in their file, because he's already read the files and he does not believe that he needs to get to know everybody else. And of course, we get a lot of these scenes dispersed throughout the episode here. What did you think about Rainer and his coming aboard discovery in this fashion?
I feel really bad for Rainer. Rainer was set up to fail. Now, partially it's his fault, because when Michael said one-on-ones, Rainer should have said, that is not my personality type. That is not going to work for me. And frankly, if I told you, hi, welcome to a room full of strangers, you're going to spend the whole rest of your day having meaningful one-on-one conversations with each one of them so that you can create a personal connection so that they can love you and trust you, I at least would go screaming for the hills. I would have quit. I'd be like, no, that's not how I meet people. That's not how I set up relationships with people. That's not how I do it. There has to be a better way than one-on-one marching me through a whole bunch of people. Rainer should have said some version of that when Michael said one-on-ones. And I think we're supposed to see that because, to my point about the Stamets thing, Rainer says, I basically want to stay in front of the science desk and do my work, until he makes a totally justifiable, you are clueless face. And then they go immediately to Stamets, who has not been paying attention to the fact that his foster daughter is basically all kinds of stressed out because he's been too busy paying attention to the Romulan tricorder. So if one of them is a jerk, they are both jerks. And I don't think that was the point the show was trying to make. I think the point the show was trying to make is all people are welcome. You have to, however, work together, and you have to work together in the ways that are good for you. I think this episode was all about good communication and bad communication and the power of communication to either build up or destroy. And Rainer's failure to, like I said, say something to Michael is a problem that he only makes worse. But I think one of the reasons why my hypothesis is correct is because we never, the only person's reaction we see to one of those interviews is Tilly's. We never see, we could have had very easily had a scene at Red's where Dittmer and Owo and Reese were like, what was that? But we don't. Even Stamets is like, okay, I'm going to go back. Reno, those two should get along quite well when they start to get to know each other. But Reno was like, yeah, last time they gave, you know, what was it? Last time we did this, there were chips. It was basically complete, like, was also like, this too is a complete waste of time. When can we go? I appreciate that Rainer does not magically fit into the crew, because that would not be consistent with the personality types. But I also think they are setting up. I'm interested. I think a lot of that was to set up more issues with Tilly than it was to set up issues with Rainer, because Tilly spent all of last season wanting to be in command. Then she went to Starfleet Academy. She got on Discovery not feeling good about how she is as an instructor, because she can't communicate with her students. So I think this is more about Tilly than it is about Rainer. But what do you think?
Well, okay, wow. Okay, we'll have to respond to there. Okay, as a dad myself, I interpreted Stamets' reaction to Indira as he thought he understood what they were feeling and going through already. And being a dad is a role that he was thrust into relatively recently. So it's not like he's got a long history with looking after a kid and being right in that position. Comparatively speaking, Rainer's been in command for 30 years. He's had this long 30-year career. And yes, while that method may not have worked with him, I don't think the mandate from Burnham was forge a necessarily a, you know, a deep, meaningful one-on-one connection with each member of the crew as much as it was get to know them, because this is a show where this is a ship where people get to know each other. And he went through all the trouble to read everyone's files, and he seemed to have memorized things from them. Mm-hmm. He could have fulfilled that by saying, I saw in your file that you previously served on a such and such ship. You know, I'd heard about those, you know, tell me about that. You know, and so he's demonstrated a bare minimum amount of interest, but he still fulfills the role. And Tilly's not wrong. He's not showing any respect to any of these people. And that's what she points out to him when they're at the bar, which is like,
and she's 100% right.
Yeah. Analyzing is not the same thing as connecting. And connecting is a huge theme in this episode. You know, they come out and Michael's voiceover while she's talking to Culver is all about connecting on this. And he's not making any effort to your point. Him getting to know somebody is to know their file. It's not to know much about a whole lot about their personality. And, you know, he says something about the fact, you know, that Linus cares deeply about the traditions of his people and raising next generations and things like that. That's all good, but, you know, that didn't come from the 20 words or less that he gave them. And he's got a different experience with his command. You know, they developed a shorthand, you know, that worked for him on that crew. Well, that's not what this crew does. And he's not there to reshape this ship and reshape this crew. He's there to be the first officer. And so I feel like it was incumbent upon him to make more of an effort than he did.
I don't disagree, but I think the way he was asked to get to know these people was not a way that would work for him. He is more of a Picard in terms of how he does his command, how he wants his relationship. He said, you know, he wanted things professional. Friendship was not really on the docket. And that is not how Michael does things. That's not how Discovery does things. That is a very touchy-feely ship and no problems with it. But Rainer is, I don't think Rainer should have to. Rainer is not going to change.
Right.
He may adjust, but I think.
But do you really think the mandate from Michael was to make friends, or as it was to get to know the crew some? I mean, because, you know, he makes that point that there's at the end of the episode in the bar to Tilly, which is that there's a difference between friendship and leadership. And in his opinion, professional distance is the way to maintain that difference. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I agree with you completely. That's what Picard did with many members of his crew. But again, it was simply, he was not showing them any respect. And you know, when he throws out there, it has to be earned. And she says, that goes both ways.
Right.
And he wasn't showing them any respect by letting them get marched in there and not even giving them, you know, that was rude. Say 20 words or less. That is
the 20 words or less was super rude. The question, tell me something about yourself I couldn't read on your file, is actually a really good question.
Sure.
The 20 words or less is junk. No, I put the blame on him on this one. Michael wants him to get to know the crew because the crew has questions about why he's the first officer. Mm-hmm. And when she says, I want you to have one-on-ones, he should have said, that's not how I get to know people. What if the goal is for me to get to know them, I really want to work on this Mullen Locke project. Can I talk to them about what they know about Mullen Locke? Can I help them work with me on this project? I don't think he understands the difference between Zora and what is a normal computer.
Mm-hmm.
Could someone walk me through that? So again, I'm not saying that Rainer is blameless. I am saying that they are all equally at fault here, because what they want from each other has never really, the only person who was clear in what she wanted to have happen was Michael, which I appreciated. Get to know the crew. But then from there, it goes sideways.
All right. Well, I want to ask you one last question about this. I'm already 25 minutes into this discussion. So we have two more plot points to discuss, or two more plot lines to discuss here. Tilly, when she's telling him off, and I love this because she runs out of her 20 words. You know, she reminds him that he's on a new ship, fresh off a demotion, and accuses him to trying how hard that is, and by being a, and then that's when she runs out of words. So fill in your own word. I'm choosing to use jerk at this point. And what do you think about that? That he is covering for quote unquote disgrace, you know, of being demoted from captain to first officer. And while he's used to being in charge, now he's second in command, and, you know, he's being brought onto this ship. And whereas he could just bark or, and he can still give orders before, but he still now reports to somebody, which is something he hasn't done for decades.
I think that's fair. I think he's prickly. He should never have made that joke to Michael. Oh my God. But when he walks onto the ship and tries to do a joke and has it land so badly, yes, I think he is feeling a new round of fresh humiliation. And the only way he feels like he can prove his worth is to solve the Mullen Locke issue, because he is the one who knows them the best.
Okay. One side question before we get on with one of the plot lines. Mm-hmm. Why weren't Owo and Detmer in this episode?
Specifically so that we would not see their reactions.
To
Rainer.
Really?
Who do we know on the who are the people we really, the characters we really know? The only two characters we know super well who had interactions with Rainer during this episode were Tilly and Stamets.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else had a quick in and out. I mean, I learned more about the bridge crew during those 20 words or less than I learned have I known in 5 seasons, which is something we've talked about multiple times.
Right.
And I think it is to set up the idea that Rainer might be being a jerk because he's being prickly, because he's being a defensive, but they are setting up that character to not actually be a jerk. And I think that is an important distinction.
Okay. If they're going that route, then why did we get Commander Reese, who has served as like the commanding officer on Discovery in the captain's
absence? But we never heard his reaction. He just kind of rolls his eyes and leaves, but he doesn't look particularly like upset or depressed. And you never hear him say like, oh my God, what a jerk. Tilly's the only one who calls him out on his stuff.
And you think, are you saying you think Detmer and Owo would have done the same?
I'm thinking we would have cared more about what Detmer or Owo would have thought. Because we know them better.
Okay. All right. How about Saru and Tarina?
Yes.
On this one. So the subject of an engagement announcement comes up. And other than the fact that Saru is described as being the handsome and erudite Captain Saru, he's good with it going out. And so they edit that bit and they're scheduled to go out, but then they participate in some negotiations about a starbase being built for some world, but in its absence, they're going to, Saru's recommendation is that they have some additional patrols go through there in the meantime. There's some concern about a Breen Imperium. That keeps getting brought up. I feel like that's got to come up at some point in the show. But after that's over, President Tarina's assistant, Mr. Devin, basically pulls Saru aside and says, I'm not going to do a great job of framing this, but here we go. That Tarina has got this issue with Vulcan Purus, and he is also a bit vulnerable when it comes to you. And since you are not emotionally capable as she is, then you can handle this more logically than she can. And there, he does not think it's a good time to announce the engagement, because some of the things that Saru said could be taken as a criticism of Navarre as well, and this will inflame those purists. And so anyways, this causes some doubt in Saru, who recommends to Tarina that they postpone the announcement of the engagement, and she puts the smackdown on that. I loved her reaction to all of this and the way that she handled everything here. Saru thinks better of it, realizes that, as she suggested, she doesn't need a caretaker, and says, and she points out that, you know, this is, conflict is not something to be feared. It's going to come up in any relationship, even with loved ones. The announcement's going to enrage Vulcan purists, but if it didn't come out and her people found out, it would erode their trust in her. Okay, so that's the best I can do summarizing all of that. I loved their interactions, and I love seeing these two interact. I think it is a whole lot of fun. What did you think about all this?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I love Tarina. She is a fantastic character. She is fabulous in this. Saru screws up by not being direct as to the thought process with her.
Mm-hmm.
She calls him out on it very quickly. There's no way that she didn't know that, Duvin was talking to her or was talking to Saru. There's no way. I mean, there's no reason to believe that she didn't watch the two of them beam out together.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree 100% with her that, she doesn't need a caretaker, that she has done her own thinking, that Duvin had come to her and, she says basically had expressed his concern. I thought about them. We moved on. And yeah, no, mm-hmm. Saru screwed up. But I thought it was one of the things I really like about this relationship is it actually is very, very healthy. Saru could have been better in his communication, but he apologized and kind of figured it out and thought it through. Those two are a very good couple. And, yeah. I mean, I screamed at Saru when he was talking about the tea and how it was a busy time for them. But other than that, but it was genuine. Like, it did kind of feel like something Saru might do.
Yeah. And he's inexperienced in these type of relationships. Yeah. And while he was definitely wrong, and I'm not excusing that, I do like the fact that the mistake he made was trying to do something in her best interest, not a, you don't know what you're doing type of a situation as much. And he just didn't think it
through. Okay, I push back on that.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I think by suggesting that Duvin somehow knows better than
I didn't take it that that's what he was suggesting. But I think it was a blind spot for him.
It is a blind spot for him. And I don't think Saru will repeat the error.
Okay. Yeah, so they get that resolved, and he's not going to make that mistake again, or at least we hope not. All right, so that gets us to our final plot line here, and that gets us to Trill, and they go to a black alert, and when they get to the planet, they're denied permission to land until Guardian Z comes up and asks Michael a question, which is, which does the fourth point to, or where's that effect? And she thinks about it for a second and realizes it's the fourth verse from the poem that they found on Lyric, and that it pointed to Beta Zed. And Guardian Z has no idea what any of this means. He was just told to ask it, verify the answer, and then go back to Trill. And once they do, then they get to meet whose name I forgot to write down, but whose previous host was Janal. And so they perform the Jiantar, and Culber hosts Janal. I loved Culber as Janal, and this is a lot of fun. And he insists that they go for a walk to look for the clue, despite the fact that they could transport. The whole thing ends up being a test. And we get a little bit of background here that Janal and, what was the Romulan's name? Should have wrote that down too, but I did not. And they were part of a team of six scientists, both from within and without the Federation, that were assembled by the president of the Federation to look into this message that Picard had recovered all those years ago, all those centuries ago. And they ended up finding the progenitor technology. When someone tried to activate it, it resulted in a horrible death. And then they collectively decided to basically lie. They said their stuff reached a dead end. They kept its location a secret. And they were only going to reveal it to the information they have and these clues to a worthy seeker. This is all about, they just can't tell you where it is. You have to prove yourself worthy. And that's why they're dishing out the clues piecemeal. Of course, this all involves a showdown with these alien predators called Itranox that have some cool reflective properties of their scales that make them cloak. And then they spit out some sort of molten barbs that can injure people as well. And it's not until Michael and Booker prove that they can confront the new alien species and prove that they just don't see it as an enemy that Janal decides to trust them, gives them the next piece of whatever this device is, key, whatever, and it has the coordinates of where they need to go next. So I summarize like the biggest part of this episode there in less than a minute. What did you think about this little adventure?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, I don't think it took any viewer very long to figure out that this was all a test. I mean, it was pretty, I will admit that I did not know about, I didn't figure out, I didn't guess the egg thing until the second beastie came in and didn't immediately start fighting the first one. Then I realized that they were probably a parental pair. I do not think I need kudos for that one. I suspect 98% of the viewers came to that same conclusion at about that same time. But I did like seeing Book's communication with the animals again. And I did like, I mean, Wilson Cruz was having the best time. And I enjoyed him being able to play that gear a lot. I could have, I mean, he's an unreliable narrator. He is not to be trusted. But I was very amused by him. If I was Michael or Book, I would have wanted to punch him in the face for making me go through all that when you could have just given me the one thing. But I really did enjoy our time with him.
Yeah, I love some of the lines that he threw out there. You know, Booker introduces himself as an unaffiliated, you know, associate or whatever. And then so that's how Janal refers to him. Okay, associate, you know, associate. Throughout the rest of their interactions. And then as he's getting ready to walk out of the cave, he's like, ah, wow, this guy was really into working out. You know, remarking on Culber's physique there. And I like this character. It's fun. We've had other Trill episodes in Discovery, and, you know, especially around Adira and Gray and a lot of things that happened there. But it was fun getting to go back and visit them in this way, which was, more akin, I think, to what we're used to seeing from Deep Space Nine. This is a kind of Trill episode I think you would have expected to find there. Okay. One other thing that stood out to me, I laughed on my rewatch of this when they are in the rocks and they've decided that they can't really deal with the Itranox, and then they try to beam out and it doesn't work. And this was like the entire point of a whole gag in Lower Decks in its last season about, you know, you get into caves, you get in these positions, and then there's interference that allows them not to beam out. And it's the second time in two episodes that there's been some sort of interference that's prevented them from transporting anywhere.
Yeah. It's either comms or the transporter or both.
Mm-hmm. And these Itranox, it's like, okay, I know it's a completely different show and they're not integrated, but like Predator could have mixed in with these Itranox really well. And even, you know, we never got a clear look at any of them there, but, you know, they would move a little bit and we got that same blurring that the Predator had. And then you occasionally get that orange glow as they were like getting ready to maybe spit out one of these barbs or something like that. And it's like, that even kind of remotely looks like the Predator's head that's on top of these things. So got a lot of Predator vibes from them.
I got a lot of Last Crusade vibes, not from them, but from this whole episode.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. So, you know, that gets us through our main storylines. We know that they got to go to someplace else. It's on the coordinates of that last piece that Janal gave them there. I feel like for the longest one, it actually generates a shortest amount of discussion with.
Well, I actually want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Do you believe Janal when he says that they wanted to hide the technology but not destroy it?
I hadn't thought of that until you asked, but I guess my initial thought is like, are they even capable of destroying it?
That's my question, because if you were a team of six, you find a thing and somebody goes up and tries to activate it and they die horribly. I'm pretty sure the next thing I want to do is destroy the technology, but I'm terrified to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I am not, and I think they did the right thing with like, this is extremely powerful. I loved the throwback to the Dominion War, you know, where, you know, everyone saw an enemy everywhere. I thought that was an extremely good explanation as to why the technology would not go with the Federation. That is something that Star Trek viewers who are pro-Federation would go, oh yeah, no, that's totally a good point. So I thought that was really good. So I was like, yeah, no, I get what you're hiding in the technology. I'm just not entirely sure that you really actually thought you could blow it up. And if you could have blown it up, I think you might have blown it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't think they could. That's a good point. I mean, I think it's something that could be hidden because no one else has found it in 800 years. And, you know, they did talk about having to go into deep space to get it. The other thing that occurred to me is that Janal's talking about, you know, what would he want? He had to see what they would do when they encountered an alien life form that was so different, whether they would see it was as an enemy or they would try to reason with it. Isn't that what the last couple episodes of the last season of Discovery were all about? With those creatures that lived beyond the edge of the galaxy, and you know, they're like giant floating whale manta ray type things, and you know, that they had to develop an entirely different form of communication in order to talk to this entire time.
And to that point, did you think Booker saying that it was a time of peace felt really like, I was like, really? That's from you. Okay.
It is at this moment. And Michael says that, yeah, she agrees it's a time of peace, but she can't guarantee it will last.
No, I thought that was a good answer.
And that was just, and you know, like, you know, and we've been hearing that again, the Breen Imperium is out there causing problems. And I don't know that they'll get a chance to talk about that discovery, but it feels like a setup for something else. We also hear that there's some opportunity because it came up like briefly for like the Emerald Chain might be, remnants of that might be pulling, coalescing again. And I know I said this like the last time we talked about Discovery, but I still want to know what the Klingons are up to in this era. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen anything from them.
Yes. I feel like they're notably absent.
Mm-hmm. All righty then. Well, any other last points you want to make then before we conclude?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I never really thought Booker was in danger, even when he got hit. I mean, that barb thing was nasty looking. And I never really thought he was in danger.
They did do the lethal weapon 1, 2, 3, on go three. On three joke, which was, and they brought that a couple times. I thought that was a nice touch.
Oh, speaking of nice touches, Slogo Cola.
Oh, yeah.
Being poured by a Ferengi.
Yeah, that's funny. And then Rainer shows up and says, that looks like, what, nuclear, radioactive or nuclear or something like that? Yeah.
Yes.
He's not wrong.
He is not wrong.
Okay, then.
Good to see a Ferengi.
Well, I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode and our discussion of episode 3 of season 5 of Discovery. We'll be back soon with our discussion of episode 4. But before we go, Beth, you want to remind everybody where we can be found online?
Sure. We can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails. X at Warp Trails. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Warp Trails Pod. And we are on the RetroZep Discord server. So if you go to the RetroZep Discord server, we have a room, the Warp Trails room, and you can discuss Star Trek with us. And while you're there, by all means, go to all the other rooms.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest. We're not on X. I mean, we have a Warp Trails account there, but I can't remember the last time anything went on it. And as for Instagram, yeah, that's about the same. Facebook, I do try and post the episodes and a few, and occasionally some other news items if I find them, but there's just not, Beth is right. The best place to come find us is just Discord. I put links to both the fact that Strange New Worlds was getting a new season and that Lower Decks was having its last season this fall. So come talk to us about it there and let us know what your thoughts are on that.
What are you thinking about this season?
I'm sorry?
I was just, they can come tell us what they're thinking about the season so far.
Indeed. All right. Well, I'll just tell you that our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. You can head over to RetroZap.com for some other great podcasts covering everything from collecting, video games, superheroes, Star Wars, and a whole lot more. And with that, thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we'll talk to you next time.
Take it easy, guys.